John Williams here. We're produced by Pete Zimmerman. Thanks for tuning in to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We start today with our jobs report. This report is sponsored by Breezy.hr. And out of the gate, we visit with Brian Battle. Brian, you're on WGN Radio again. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be back.
I'll mention you are the director of Performance Trust Capital Partners. Let's talk a little bit about cheap money from the Fed and what that means to the average listener. I mean, we talk about these big economic policies. When we talk about the Fed and monetary policy, what does that mean to me, listening to you?
So the Federal Reserve was empowered in 1913 with controlling the supply of money in the United States. And they have two jobs, is to have the stable value of the currency and have full employment. Israel was a condition that was added in the 70s. So the Federal Reserve controls interest rates. So typically they control short-term interest rates. So if the economy is having trouble, the Federal Reserve lowers short-term interest rates to make it easier for the economy to succeed. So if it's cheaper to borrow money, you can refinance your house, maybe finance a car, do whatever, with lower rates. More recently, in the past couple of years, past 10 years particularly, the Federal Reserve has also lowered long-term interest rates by buying securities in the capital markets. The short answer is, John, the Federal Reserve is lowering interest rates right now to help the economy. The debate about the Fed is, well, maybe the emergency is over and the Fed doesn't need to help the economy anymore.
How is it hurting the economy or anybody? What's so bad about low interest rates?
So low interest rates will distort economic incentives. So if interest rates are held really, really low, investors will take more risk. So if effectively the 10-year Treasury note yields right now 1.5%, and the inflation rate is certainly at 2% or higher. So we have negative interest rates. So really, from a financial engineering perspective, there's free money in the system, and that allows people to invest and take chances maybe that they wouldn't otherwise, because the risk is so low because the interest rate is so low. So everybody feels that at home with their 0% in their savings and 0% in their checking account.
Right. So therein lies the downside, right? I mean, it does encourage economic activity. It's a good time to borrow and buy a house or borrow and maybe expand your business, but you don't get any safe returns on your money either. That's, I guess, the downside, not significant returns.
That's exactly right. So the short-term answer is low interest rates, or this extraordinary monetary policy, punishes savers and rewards borrowers. And that is the policy choice that the Federal Reserve has taken, is we're going to punish savers because we would rather incent borrowers, because maybe that'll make the economy pick up speed.
Where should we be? What's the best position? I mean, is it too aggressive right now?
So that is the debate that's happening right now, is the Federal Reserve, under unusual and exigent circumstances, which is the terms they use, during the last financial crisis in 2009, 10, 11, 12, they said, we got to lower rates because the world's ending. And they held that policy steady for the past 10 years. So now, and we felt some of this last week when the stock market sold off, is during a Fed meeting, the Federal Reserve is saying, hey, maybe we don't need this unusual stuff anymore. Maybe we should start raising rates again to a more normal level. Because the Federal Reserve, if they hold rates too low for too long, they will distort incentives and cause weird things to happen in the economy. So the Federal Reserve, weird things meaning malinvestment.
Yeah. That's interesting.
That's the debate right now, is maybe they should stop doing that, and maybe we're going to have higher interest rates, and that's what took some of the air out of the stock market last week.
I wonder if some of that fueled some of the crazy investment in GameStop and some other equities or things that people didn't know a lick about, but they were just looking for a place to put their money.
That's right. It encourages risk-taking. And so for you, it might be a personal disaster, but as a public policy, that's something the Federal Reserve wants to do in aggregate. So there a huge debate, sort of tangential to the stock market talk, is the one thing that will threaten the stock market is higher rates. Because if you get zero on bonds, your only choice is the stock market. If you can buy stocks on a nice utility and get like a 5% return, you know, you get a 5% dividend, then maybe other stocks are overpriced.
Hmm. Brian Battle is the director of Performance Trust Capital Partners. I got more questions for you. I don't have more time. Brian, you'll have to come back on again, and let's continue this conversation.
Anytime, John. Glad to do it.
Thursdays about this time, we like to visit with Ian Schur, the editor-at-large at CNET, CNET.com. And today is one of those days. Hey, Ian, thanks for joining us.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Are you a geek? Are you watching the Windows launch?
I am sometimes the definition of a geek. So yes, I have been watching it all this morning, and it's interesting. You know, Microsoft really wants to change the way that we use Microsoft Windows, and you know, this is the software that powers pretty much every computer out there that's not an Apple computer, right? It's the start menu when you start up the computer and all of that. And Microsoft's changing a lot of the way it looks and feels to try and make it feel more modern, but also to integrate it more with like video game stuff from Xbox or even to run Android apps from Google's Android store. And so in a lot of ways, it's really interesting what they're trying to do.
On a related topic, but not about Microsoft per se, several of us on my 9 to Noon show have recently discovered a bunch of tricks that our iPhones and tablets will do. Like if you keep your finger pressed on the space bar, you can move the cursor around to correct mistakes you're typing. A lot of us didn't know that. What do you and so then it opened up the floodgate of things that our phones and technology can do that we don't know. What do you say about these super powerful, super smart, and adaptive technologies that people generally don't know that much about?
I mean, the reality is that I remember reading a stat out there a long time ago that people use something like 15 or below percent of their computer's capability, like a lot of people. And, you know, if you think about it, a lot of us who use Microsoft Windows or Office, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, we use very specific parts of it, but we don't use the whole thing. And the reality is that software is so complex these days that there are a million ways to use it. And as a result, yeah, there are certain features that you may never have heard about. You know, we have a whole section of our website on CNET called How To, which is literally just a bunch of recommendations like that. Like one recently that we put up was you can actually print to PDF from your phone. A lot of people don't even know that, right? You can create PDFs out of websites or out of emails just like you can on a computer. But it's not something that's obvious and built into the software. It's something you have to know how it works.
Well, since these machines know who we're talking to and what we're talking about, it would be nice if it would realize I do a lot of typos and I'm backspacing and using the cursor, and then it should have a pop-up saying, hey, John, here's a shortcut to what you're doing. It doesn't do that, does it?
Well, maybe it enjoys watching you misspell things.
Yes, well, then it's the happiest damn phone in America, let me tell you. Talk to me about Jeff Bezos.
You know, so there is a really funny thing going on with him lately. So you may have heard, you know, he stepped down as the CEO of Amazon. He's the world's richest man, and he owns a rocket company like Elon Musk, right? His is called Blue Origin. And he auctioned off a seat on his Blue Origin rocket to someone for, I think it was $28 million, you know, pocket change, really. And what was really interesting about it is that he's going to go up into space with this person and his brother. And I think what's funny is that people have responded to this by saying, well, let's create a petition saying we're going to deny him entry back into Earth. And so on change.org, there's a petition with 20,000 signatures where people are saying, don't let this guy back. He's actually Lex Luthor from Superman. We shouldn't allow someone like that back onto the planet.
Well, I suppose you could just say, listen, you need to have been vaxxed for 2 weeks before we can let you back in.
Hang out on the moon until then.
Talk about your aliens. Speaking of which, talk to me about the Pentagon UFO report. CNET has been covering this.
Yeah, we're really interested. So it's due tomorrow at the latest, although they could release it at any time. And what's interesting is that it's been ordered up because, among other things, CBS's 60 Minutes and a number of other articles have come out lately with actual information inside the government and inside the Pentagon about UFOs, and not the, like just the alien type that, you know, we remember from all the movies, but actually like unidentified flying objects. The most compelling so far has been a Navy video. This is real. The government confirmed it, where they were able to actually lock onto a UFO with radar, which means it's not some visual trickery, right? It's not a weather balloon refracting through the sun if radar can track it. And so the real question, of course, we all have is, well, wait a minute, are we alone in the universe or not? And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the Pentagon says. What we've heard so far and what we've written about on CNET is that most of the indications are that this is new technology that we're just not aware of. The government swears up and down it's not their technology, which means someone out there has better flying technology than us. But I'm excited because no matter what, if you look at these things move around, there's a lot of promise for the future about how to get around if this is what we've been able to build.
Yeah, but the we then has to be the Russians or the Germans or the Chinese. And the technology on display on these videos is so exponentially better that it's almost troubling, right? Like, we're not behind. We're light years behind if they've got spaceships or rocket ships that'll do those things.
Yeah, I mean, it could also be the penguins in Antarctica who built it. We don't know yet, but I agree with you. It can be scary. And, you know, the reality is that this is what happens, right? You remember Sputnik way back when. That kicked off the space race and caused a whole technological change in the way our society worked. It may be that if this is real and we do prove it's, you know, coming from us, you know, or planet Earth, then maybe that will push the government and all the companies like Boeing and everyone who supposedly are the high-tech companies to come up with answers to it.
Okay, I'm enthusiastic about this topic, but I come to this conclusion that it's nothing, that it's in fact not even a single thing that they are seeing, because I can't believe the Russians are that far ahead of the Chinese. I can't believe that that's a spaceship, and so the only thing left is it's nothing, but I'm not comfortable with that conclusion either, Ian.
Well, I'll tell you, we should just be careful about, you know, the rising heat. Those penguins are getting really angry. So I imagine they could. I mean, I don't know, right? It's actually really, I don't know what this all will turn out to be. What I do know is that if the government is lying to us, right, and they have actually communicated with aliens, I can't believe we're actually saying this in like a real conversation, right? Yeah. But if it is true and they've been lying to us, this is the time to fess up. Because there is, like, if we learn that we were lied to many years from now, it's going to really hurt our trust in our government, and our trust in our government's already really low historically. So this is a very important moment in that as well.
Not sure what the damage would be done if they told us. It's not like I'm going to say, oh, aha, I'm going to go out and make a spaceship. I'd just like to know what they know. The fact that Ron Johnson gets to know, to me, is proof that we should all get to know.
When it comes to something like this, yes, I think we all ought to know. But it also may be a case of it's getting to a point where there's no way to hide it anymore, right? And that's part of what I think pushed this. The fact that it got declassified, that it became public, that the FBI has released all of their information on it, that the Pentagon is now being forced to. I mean, President Barack Obama said that he was informed about the stuff years ago. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, gosh, why didn't you tell us?
I know.
So I don't know.
Ian Schur, editor-at-large, the only time you've heard him say, I don't know, to anything. It's nice to talk to you, Ian.
Absolutely. Take care.
You can read his stuff at CNET.com. Gary Stern joins us now. And just a quick reminder before we put Gary on that today your hometown features Elk Grove Village. We're shining WGN's spotlight on different communities each month, and this time it's Elk Grove Village. We could sign it on your town next. Go to WGNradio.com/your hometown and tell us why we should be telling folks about you. We're sponsored by At Properties and McDonald's, your hometown. So let's visit with one of those businesses. On a phone line, Gary Stern, the chairman and CEO of Stern Pinball, located in Elk Grove Village. Hey, Gary, it's John Williams. How are you today?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
You guys are the largest pinball manufacturers in the country or in the world?
In the world. We're about 90% of the pinball market. There are some, you know, other companies that make interesting hobbyists basically making other games. Because we have three market segments. We make games for game operators who may put them in family entertainment centers or in bar arcades, which you see all over Chicago now, or just general bowling alleys, bars, restaurants, what have you. We make games for enthusiast collectors. There's a lot of people who are really into pinball. The IFPA, the International Flipper Pinball Association, ranks 100,000 players in 30 countries. So it's very, you know, some of them get very serious. And then just what we call general home buyer, somebody who just wants a game for the home, especially during COVID. That market took off for us. So we've been very busy here making games for this country, and being as we export about 40% for all over the world.
Once again, another company who, if I said in or out, up or down, pandemic hits, do they prosper? Sounds like the pinball business prospered. Can you talk a little bit about that? What was 2020 like for you guys? You may have had trouble getting parts.
That's more today. So first of all, we were shut down for a short period of time, months, but not, you know, a huge period of time. And then we rehired our production staff. We kept our design staff and what have you. And we kept the production as much as we could. But then we were restarted, and we've increased production to well over the pre-COVID level. Right now we're probably double what we were. We're striving to get to double what we were. We have a lot of back orders, and we're working to fill them. And having said that, we've come out with new games since COVID. We come out with three new what we call cornerstone games, your main games, our principal games that we make as the three different versions of each title. They're all licensed title. We just started The Mandalorian. Now, you talk about parts difficulties and labor difficulties. Certainly, we don't import that much in our games. We make the games here in a 105,000 square foot factory. You know, there's typically 300 plus people in the building on any day. So the parts mostly are made locally, but there are some things that come from overseas that we have the child on the game custom molded for us. And most toys are made and paint because of the stenciling, the hand painting made overseas in China. Some of our other parts are China, or the parts that go into printed circuit boards, what have you. Printed circuit boards, the metal parts are all made locally. So we're almost all local sourced.
I'm glad to hear that. American manufacturing done right here in the United States in Elk Grove Village, for that matter.
We're political. We're very proud to be American manufacturers.
I think you get bipartisan support on that. And it must be fun or even fascinating to say, okay, let's design a game and maybe we'll use the rights from Star Wars and come up with a Mandalorian game or a series of games, or take a rock and roll band like Led Zeppelin and make a Led Zeppelin pinball machine. But I guess the world is your oyster, right? I mean, you could come up with any kind of a design. That must be a very fun part of the job.
Yeah, it certainly is. And all of our titles are licensed. We do rock and roll. We do a lot of Marvel heroes, a lot of Lucas Star Wars. We occasionally do a product. We did Harley Davidson a couple times. And very strong TV shows or series.
Okay, I got an idea for you. Tell me if this is a good one. You do a WGN radio branded pinball machine, and the idea is, you get the ball, and you hit the flipper, and the ball goes up, and it lands in Bob Surratt's mouth. And then he holds it there in his mouth. You have to drill right in the kisser. And then you got to take the next ball. You get, boom, and that's your bonus ball, and you got to hit that free, and then you got two balls going. Do you like my idea?
Yes, we did that mechanical device on Jurassic Park, except it's a T-Rex eating the ball.
Right.
When we pick a title, I'll submit that to the group. The sales and marketing people and the design people get together and decide if a title is an appropriate one for us. We only can use so many different titles, so I'll ask them if that's interesting to them. The key is, will we have a design group whose creative juices flow from the suggestion of a WGN pinball machine?
But I thought you were also going to say, maybe you would agree, that it also needs to have national or international appeal. So while maybe we could sell three or four of those in Chicago, you need to sell 3,000 or 4,000 of them around the world, right?
That is correct. We do look at what would be attractive throughout
the
world.
What's the price range on these things? You described the three different tiers, but just how little, how much?
They run from mid $5,000 up to $9,000 for the different versions of them, and we also have a home game. It's not it's full size playfield, a little bit smaller footprint, and it has an MSRP of $4,600. So figure mid 5,000s to about 9,000 for a pro, a premium, or an LE limited edition, which Mandalorian, there's only 750 limited editions, wow, all numbered, signed by the designer with a certificate of authenticity. That my main job is to sign those certificates. And
I'm surprised they aren't more, to be honest with you. I mean, folks are spending that kind of money on bicycles these days and
absolutely
all kinds of premium toys and products. Gary Stern is the chairman and CEO and the chief designer of the WGN Radio Bob Surratt Pinball in the Mouth pinball machine at Stern Pinball in Elk Grove Village. It's such a good story to hear, Gary. My best to everybody over there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
sternpinball.com. 12:45 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. The business news continues with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines is reportedly preparing to announce a large aircraft order, and it could be the largest aircraft order ever. The announcement coming next week could include hundreds of new planes. United has some of the oldest aircraft in the U.S. airline industry, with a fleet of 800 jets, with many of them decades old. The airline has less than 300 aircraft currently on order, but would need hundreds more to replace upcoming retirements. Deals will reportedly include orders for Airbus and Boeing jets. Another sign of recovery for the local rental housing market, developer Draper & Kramer is planning an apartment development near McCormick Place in Chicago. Cranes reports the firm submitted plans for a 12-story, 150-unit apartment building at 2141 South Wabash. The developer wants to build a project on a vacant lot at the northeast corner of Wabash and Cermak. That's just south of a new 275-unit development it opened last year at 2111 South Wabash. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Yeah, you know, Johnny, I'm thinking that Pinball Factory has to be a really fun place to work.
Oh, I was thinking of that, too.
Ding, 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 ding.
All day.
I saw a tweet about NASA being involved in the business of food, and of course, I thought right away about Matt Damon in the Martian and how he used some really inventive ways to grow potatoes on Mars to stay alive. Is that the kind of thing that NASA is up to?
At least from the NASA Harvest perspective, we're not in the space food growing business.
Mary Mitkish is the assistant program director for NASA's Harvest program, and she says the focus is more down to earth than growing potatoes on Mars.
What we do is we use NASA satellite imagery to help with agricultural monitoring and promote food security, both in the U.S. and worldwide.
The NASA Landsat satellites can see all sorts of things going on in farm fields.
There are many things we can see to determine kind of the health of crops, crop growth, crop area, weather patterns that might be affecting crop growth. So, for example, we're seeing a lot of drought this year.
They could also see the fields flattened across Iowa and Illinois last year by the derecho. And in Africa, how locusts had wiped out huge areas.
We were very heavily monitoring what was going on there, because what we want to be able to do is say, hey, here's what we're seeing. Here's what the shortage might be, and give governments, policymakers, decision makers an opportunity to respond in advance of a food shortage happening.
The images and data coming from 438 miles up they're just remarkable. Here's the website. You can actually take a look at it, landsat.visibleearth.nasa.gov, or just Google Landsat and you should be able to find it. Those images and data collected by Landsat and other satellites that NASA uses are shared with anyone that has a stake in food and market security, including traders at the Chicago Board of Trade, where weather continues to pressure prices right now. Taking a look at the latest numbers at the Chicago Board of Trade, we've got soybeans trading down a nickel. Wheat is trading down 9 cents. Corn is perked up, though. It's up about 2 cents. From the farm to your belly, today is National Pralines Day and a summertime favorite, National Bomb Pop Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us to talk about, well, let's start with Prime Day, which I did not participate in, but I'll bet other folks did. Hi, Amy.
Quite a few people did. In fact, there were some records broken this year. Amazon said that Prime members bought more than 250 million items from around the world. So We're talking vacuums to, I don't know, Crest white strips and toilet paper. They bought all kinds of stuff. But when we look at the numbers, overall online spending during the two-day event was over $11 billion. That is a 6.1% increase compared to last year's Prime Day held in October. So we're talking some records were broken. They also said that 1 trillion visitors came to the site. And I mean, 1 trillion, that's so many. And over 100 million items across 18 product categories were purchased. So 250 million items total, but we're talking about the, across the product categories. It's really amazing. What I think is interesting is there's kind of a halo effect to this. So other retailers kind of try to keep up. So Walmart, Target, Costco, Best Buy, Macy's, they did kind of something similar on their own to try to capitalize on that and catch that wave. And they all reported some, we don't have exact numbers yet, but they, you know, they saw gains as well. So it looks like that appetite for online shopping is still in full force.
Trying to do the math in my head. If there were a trillion site visits, how many per every man, woman, and child on earth is that? There's so divide a trillion, 7 billion people or whatever the population is. That must be a lot of people clicking, 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 shopping all around.
That's, yeah, because that's multiple visits, right? So that's like, I came in the morning and then I sent this product to my friend and then this happened. So there's like a lot of tracking going on. I signed up for broadcast because I was told there'd be no math, but that's my back of the envelope there.
A look at travel rules in popular European destinations is the headline on a U.S. news story. I heard Peter Greenberg talking about some of the changing rules this weekend. What are you hearing about?
Yeah, so overall, the European Union has recommended that all 27 countries lift that ban and allow in U.S. travelers who can prove vaccination status or show a negative test. But they've left it to each individual country. So some of the main popular ones, and it varies. So if you're planning on travel, check and check again, because it changes really, really fast. So for example, Italy, you have to meet the prerequisites to get an EU travel certificate, which is kind of a tricky thing. There's no US official certificate, at least not this point. So we don't have like a reciprocal agreement. So you do have to convince the country that you need to have that certificate in order to apply and get that certificate, which is a whole other thing. But overall, Italy so far is seeing pretty low tourist numbers from and booking for future travel from US. But here's how quickly it changes. So up until Monday, if you were in the UK, you could go to Italy, no problem. On Monday, on fears and concerns of that Delta variant number rising, they now require a 5-day quarantine. So that's when I say, you know, check and check again and keep checking until your arrival. But overall, France, Italy, Greece, Spain, that's kind of those are the main places where it's going to be simplest for American travelers. The UK is still requiring a 10-day isolation period, but that's the only one. If you can show proof of vaccine, if you can navigate that EU travel certificate and or get a negative test, a PCR test within 72 to 48 hours, depending on the country, generally you can travel in that country.
Give me the headline on the Ever Given, that Suez Canal boat.
Yeah, this thing is such a fascinating story. So as we know, that was the boat that was stuck. It was impounded by the Egyptian authority pending all these legal matters. And so companies like Lenovo and IKEA and a couple of others had millions of dollars of stuff stuck on that boat. So they're filing insurance claims, things like that. Now they could soon resume their journey. A deal has been reached. So the Egyptian authority is going to release that boat. So all of those shipping containers are going to finally start making their way to their destination after sitting there since late March.
Hooray, said someone waiting for a sofa.
Right.
Amy Booth will visit again. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much.